We've discussed on past episodes that as we near midlife and enter perimenopause and menopause, that we're not given a manual of the changes that will be happening to us both mentally and physically. A lot of times it sneaks up on us and suddenly we're faced with symptoms that we were aware might happen and some we've just been told will happen and that we just have to deal with them. One of the latter is menopausal weight gain. We've seen our mothers, friends, and their mothers all begin to round out as they go through what they call the change. And we perhaps think, well, this is it. I mean, it was good while it lasted. And then we give up total control. But my guest today says that that is not the case, that there are steps that can be taken to take back control, but that it is up to you, the individual, to take them. With me today is Dr. Deanna Holdren. Dr. Deanna is a board-certified family practice physician and practices in the area of functional medicine and is the author of the Dr. Deanna's Healing Handbook, A Guide to Disease Prevention and Natural Aging Through a Whole Foods Diet, Hormone Balance, Total Body Detox, and Exercise. She is also the host of the Ask Dr. Deanna podcast. She's here to give us some medical background on what we are going through and then what we can do to prevent and or combat this weight gain. Hey friend, welcome to your safe place to begin redesigning midlife. Do you know deep inside that it is time to start focusing on your health and wellness, but have no idea where to start? Do you wake up every morning saying, "I'm starting today," and end it with, "I'll start again tomorrow"? I'm Leslie, and when I turned 50, I felt the same and longed for some sense of self-control and new confidence in who I was becoming in midlife. I finally realized that the change I needed was up to me. In this podcast, you are going to find everything you need to build your healthiest midlife today, to live happier and longer tomorrow. So embrace being a beginner again, open your heart to change, and let's get to redesigning. Hey, Dr. Deanna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Leslie. I'm excited to be here and I'm excited to share, you know, what I really view as good news with your audience today. There are so many things that we can do. And that's what I love about functional medicine. I love being able to help empower people to make changes that are lifestyle changes that are going to, you know, have an impact not only on their life, but on the lives of other people around them as well as they move, you know, beyond 50.
Right. So, well, can I ask you, because I was telling somebody the other day that I was going to be having this conversation with you and that you practice functional medicine. And she was like, "Well, what is that exactly?" And I couldn't give her an exact description. Can you tell us what functional medicine is, what it is exactly, and how you came to practice it?
Yes, absolutely. So functional medicine is really what I like to call root cause medicine. It is getting to the root of a disease, the root of a condition, to figure out, you know, what is causing this and then knowing how to fix it from there. So many times in medicine, you know, we prescribe a pill, a medication for this or that, and it's really a band-aid approach. You're not getting at the root. And so what we found is that a lot of times lifestyle medicine, you can make lifestyle changes, you know, take type 2 diabetes, for example, it's reversible. You can reverse it just with lifestyle, with diet. And here you've got people who feel horrible because maybe they're on five or six different medications for their type 2 diabetes, maybe even insulin. And the reality is, with diet, with lifestyle, with exercise, you can make dramatic improvements, with diseases like that. So it's basically, you know, getting to the root, of it. And if you said, "Well, you know, how did you end up, you know, pursuing functional medicine?" It basically came from my own health. You know, when I was in medical school, we were trained on the low-fat cardiac diet. I'm sure many of your listeners can remember that time period, in the 90s. And I am, you know, the person who's going to follow it completely. And so I had essentially eliminated a lot, the majority of the fat from my diet. And what happened is when you eliminate fat from your diet, what are you eating? You're basically eating carbs, sugar, that sort of thing. And so, you know, we would look at labels and all we cared about was the fat on the label. We weren't looking for anything else, just the fat. So we were eating hydrogenated fats. A lot of times we were eating, you know, just really horrible things. It was really the, you know, the start of all of this processed food. And what happened for me is because I had eliminated those essential fats, those healthy fats, it threw me into an arthritis, an inflammatory state that basically caused me to develop some arthritis, an inflammatory arthritis. And, you know, what I learned was that, you know, a lot of us have these genes that kind of predispose us to certain diseases and so forth. But what we eat or what we bathe our genes in, okay, that absolutely matters. So if I'm eating whole foods, clean, I'm eating from the garden, you know, then I'm going to kind of turn that gene off. If I'm eating the standard American diet, which is very processed, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of chemicals and a lot of, you know, hydrogenated, you know, trans fats and so forth, then I'm going to flip the switch, sugar as well. I'm going to flip the switch and turn that gene on. And then now I've got this condition. And so that's one of the things that I've learned. But that was really the thing, you know, in search of my own healing was really what caused me to walk down this path, because I wanted to understand what is happening. I wanted to know the why behind my inflammatory arthritis, which ultimately led me to functional medicine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then so I understand why you say it's good news, because just because you may have the genetics of something like arthritis doesn't mean that you will have it if you treat your body the way you should and eat the way that you should. So that's very good news. And I'm sure it's not just for arthritis. It's for many, many different diseases and conditions.
Yes, absolutely it is.
So a lot of women experience weight gain in perimenopause and in menopause. And I've heard people say, well, they don't really gain weight. It's just weight distribution. And others say, well, it's just going to happen and you're just going to have to accept it. But what is the truth? How do we start taking back control when we start seeing that scale creeping up little by little by little?
Okay. I love this. This is one of my favorite topics, because I think that there are so many things that we can do that make a tremendous difference. The first thing is understanding what is happening to my body. Okay. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Why is this happening? We all know, it's no secret. You can ask any woman, you know, over 50, you are going to see a change, a transition in your metabolism. Your hormones are changing dramatically. And because of that, you're going to see some changes in metabolism as well. And when that happens, it's almost as if we become, you know, super sensitive to carbs, especially. And if you look at the standard American diet, it's loaded with carbs. I mean, we've got people out there eating six meals a day, mm-hmm. and it's very carb heavy. And what's happening is, you know, they are packing on weight, because when you eat the carbs, you eat the sugar, okay, carbs and sugar, it basically spikes your blood sugar. Okay. So my blood sugar will increase. Well, then my body does basically produces a bunch of insulin to bring that blood sugar down. That insulin level is high now. So I can test my circulating insulin levels, and you can see that they're, you know, considerably high, even in the fasting state. And that insulin level is high. And what that does is, yeah, drops my blood sugar, brings it back in normal range. But insulin is also a growth hormone. It's going to send the message in our body, pack that stuff as fat. Okay. Mm. It's exactly what happens in the beef industry. So if you're in a farming community, like I am, you know, we've got a lot of farmers, and if they want to fatten up a cow, you ask anybody in my community, if you want to fatten up your cow, what do you feed it? Grain. They grain finish it. Okay. Well, that grain, again, the same thing for the cow, it is spiking its blood sugar, therefore causing elevated insulin, and that's packing on as fat. So we are grain fed, just like the cows in the field. And we got to stop. Okay. So we need to stop right there. And
that's a lovely picture, by the way. That is a lovely picture. If anything will change the way you eat, being seen as doing the same thing that the cows do, yeah, that'll do it.
Right. So, you know, I joke sometimes, and, you know, if in times when I've, you know, gone in the direction of too much grain or whatever, I'm like, yeah, I just need the t-shirt that says grain fed. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, or the X through the grain fed. Okay. Right. That would be better. So anyway, that's some of what's happening. Add in the whole hormone transition, and you've just got this whole hot mess that is driving toward weight gain. And it's not uncommon to see, 10 pounds a year. And it just keeps coming on, year after year after year. So what can we do? Well, number one, it starts with diet and reducing the carb content. And I typically tell my patients, cut your carbs down to less than 50 grams a day. No more than 50 grams. If they really are not able to budge the weight at all, I will have them cut it all the way down to 20 grams of carbohydrates per day. Okay. So yeah, it is hard. It can be difficult, but they absolutely will lose weight when they do that. So it's really more the carbs that are the issue that's driving the weight gain. So by reducing the carbohydrate, and you're getting plenty of carbs in your vegetables. If you said, well, what are you eating then? You're eating, clean, lean protein sources, not necessarily lean protein, but just clean protein sources. Mm-hmm. And then you're also eating your vegetables. Some people will include low glycemic fruit, which would be like, berries, that sort of thing. And that makes all the difference in the world, because then what's happening is you're pulling that insulin level down, and you can test that. That's testable in your blood work to see, where are my insulin levels? What's happening with this? And it does make a huge difference. That, and then the activity. Okay. So activity becomes a non-negotiable after 50. And it's, you've got to be getting the steps in. Ideally, you want to be hitting at least 10,000 steps a day. That can be really hard. I think when you look at that 50, that menopausal woman who's right at the age of 50, most of them are still working, and maybe they don't have time to pull exercise in or whatever. And so then you've got this gradual creep, of weight gain, and the exercise becomes a non-negotiable. You have to make time for yourself, and you have to fit that in somewhere to be able to get those steps. So I practice medicine. I'm in the office during the day. I can tell you that in my office during the day, I am going to end up getting a whopping 3,500 steps in. That's it. Mm-hmm. So bad. Okay. On the weekend when I'm at home, if I put my Apple Watch on and track it, I may be hitting 15,000, 20,000 steps just at home. Okay.
Right.
So that's the difference. Okay. And so what happens is, when I go home on a work day, I know that I have a date with the treadmill. Okay. Or that I'm going to be walking outside. I'm going to be doing something active, because it's going to help to basically burn those calories and just keep things moving. Mm-hmm. It's definitely use it or lose it. Okay. No question about it. The other thing that becomes super important, if you said, well, what can we do, from the standpoint of losing weight, it is intermittent fasting. Intermittent fasting is kind of a trend right now. It's something that I've employed in my practice. We get great results with it. And I typically have people start just with a 12-hour fast at nighttime. So if you eat dinner at 7 p.m., then absolutely no calories until 7 a.m. the next day. And you can, alter that based on your schedule. Maybe you eat dinner at 8 p.m. Okay, then no calories until 8 a.m. the next day. In that 12 hours, your body burns through the glucose, the sugar that's there in the system. And after the 12 hours, you will start burning fat. Okay, so that's the exciting thing. And once you have the 12 hours down, then you push it to 14. Okay, now I've got 2 extra hours of fat burning. When you have that down, okay, always check with your doctor, of course, maybe push it to 16. And, again, that's going to help with weight management, because you literally are burning fat. Your body is breaking down stored fat to use for energy during that time. And so when you see that intermittent fasting, if you're fasting for what ends up being 16 hours, then you are consuming your meals in an 8-hour window. All right, which is a very healthy thing to do. I mean, you can go back and look at fasting has been used as a health technique. It's not only, something that is going to give a rest to digestion and give the body a rest, but it also is a cleansing mechanism for the body. After about 14 hours of fasting, something called autophagy kicks in, which is this cellular cleansing that happens, where your cells are literally cleaning themselves out through this process called autophagy. And it
never
makes,
heard of that.
It's your body's kind of inborn detox system. Okay. Huh. It's a detox system that is at the cellular level that we just have on board, which is pretty fantastic. So you get some amazing health benefits from that as well.
So you're saying intermittent fasting should happen every day? You should have at least 12 hours that you're not eating? Or is it something that cycles, you know, you want to intermittent fast every third day, every day, you say?
You know, I think that everybody should fast 12 hours at night. That's what we were meant to do. Think about it. You know, you eat at 7 p.m. You don't need to eat again until 7 a.m. You know, so we should all be fasting 12 hours at night. And there were some studies that I had read long before intermittent fasting kind of came into favor. And those studies talked about, you know, longevity and, you know, anti-aging, not just on the outside, but on the inside with organs, internal organs and so forth. And it basically tied anti-aging to a 12-hour fast at night. You know, absolutely made a difference. You're going to have less, you know, fat around the liver. And again, it's going to make a difference long-term.
Wow. So what about stopping what you eat during the day at a certain time? I mean, should you have your dinner before, say, 7 o'clock? And should you not eat after 7? Does that matter? Because I've heard that that matters too.
It does. It actually does matter. And what matters most there is that after you eat that last meal, you should be awake, up and moving, you know, house, you know, taking care of the house, whatever, for 3 hours before you go to bed. The last thing you want to do is put the calories in and go to bed. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you eat, you stay up for 3 hours, and then you can go to bed.
Okay. Okay. So I am on several, menopause and midlife kind of Facebook pages and boards. And there are a lot of women that talk about bloating, and I don't know if bloating is so much weight gain or what it is, but they are very, very upset about this bloating. And maybe they mean that it's weight gain. And I've heard, you know, some women are like, you know, my doctor just tells me I just need to work out more. And other women are are talking about maybe having liposuction to get rid of this midlife weight gain. What say you about these things?
Okay. So first of all, you can tell, is it bloating or is it fat, by checking it out first thing in the morning. If you fasted 12 hours, you wake up in the morning and it's down, the belly's looking thin, you know, whatever, and then it gets bigger as the day goes on, that's bloating. And that is the number one cause of that is your diet. It's the standard American diet. So let's talk about that for a minute, and then I'll go back and hit the other things.
Okay.
So the standard American diet has changed so much in the past 30 years. And what's changed about it is we've become processed. We've become fake. You hear about these fake meats that certain, you know, that some people are, you know, promoting or whatever, just fake food in that it's got lots of chemicals, glyphosate being one of the largest ones. Glyphosate is Roundup. Okay. I have been anti-Roundup from the beginning. The reason is that, you know, they say it's safe for human consumption, but what we've learned is that it is not safe for your gut microbiome. All those organisms that are living inside your gut that are essential for life, essential for so many things. You know, 80, 90% of our immune system is in the gut. You know, our serotonin, which is our happy, healthy, you know, joy neurotransmitter coming from the gut. And so what happens is when we're eating these processed foods, these fake foods, Frankenfoods, that's what I like to call them.
That's a good word for them.
Is, you know, we're consuming levels of chemicals that are doing damage to the microbiome. We're consuming, you know, the glyphosate, which is damaging the microbiome. When the microbiome is damaged, we get bloating. We're not digesting our food properly. It's not working right. And now there's bloating. So if you can move away from grain and sugar, that would be the first step, because so much of the grain is so processed and loaded with these chemicals. So moving away from grain and sugar, and you'll see a tremendous improvement in the bloating. Adding in, you know, a good healthy probiotic, One of the things that we've seen, actually looked at a neuropsychiatric textbook. And, you know, I was very upset about, you know, all of the issues that we have in our schools. I, you know, was telling someone that I felt like I could find a link to glyphosate to some of these behavioral disorders that we're seeing going on in schools.
Yes.
So I pulled up a 2000 and it was either 17 or 18 neuropsychiatric textbook. That is a medical textbook. And lo and behold, there is an entire chapter in there on gut dysbiosis, okay, which is where you've thrown your gut off, being caused by Roundup, by glyphosate. They call it out in this medical textbook because it interferes with the microbiome's ability to function properly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so because of that, you know, again, we get bloating, we get, you know, lack of neurotransmitters, which is going to cause behavioral disruptions. We also get a lowered immune system. Now we're running down this path to autoimmunity, okay, because we've affected the immune system. And we've specifically interfered with one of the probiotics that live in there, one of the gut bugs called Bacillus coagulans. And Bacillus coagulans helps protect us from things like C. difficile. So you know somebody, all the listeners out there, you probably know somebody who has had this infectious diarrhea after being on antibiotics. It's very common. And if we were taking care of our gut, you know, the microbes, that would not happen. And again, it's in large part because of the glyphosate consumption. So diet is huge. And the cool thing is, you know, you can eat foods that are going to help promote, you know, healthy gut microbiome. You can eat foods that are going to help with those serotonin levels and just make your support your immune system in just a very, very beautiful way. So that's the first part of that is diet, diet, diet. Yeah. The second question that you asked, you know, you can melt that stuff off. And I'm telling you, you know, faster than, you know, going to the gym. Okay. You can make more gains, you know, more quickly in the kitchen at the end of the fork. Okay. Absolutely. You can. I had somebody just recently who came in and I almost didn't recognize her. And I was a patient, almost didn't recognize her. And she said, I listened to your podcast and I did what you told me to do. And I have been doing the fasting and I eliminated grains and I eliminated sugar. And she dropped 30 pounds in a very short period of time and was feeling wonderful.
Wow.
So that's fast results.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, 30 pounds, even if it were 6 months, that's still a great result.
Right. Right. Exactly. I've always heard it said that, losing weight isn't about, I mean, exercise is great and fitness is great, but it's all what you do in the kitchen. That's where the hard work is done. I think the fitness and the exercise part is done in tandem, but you got to start with the diet. So what about the liposuction though? Because I was very surprised to read that someone would take such drastic measures as liposuction. I think someone also mentioned the Cool Sculpting, which feels very scary to me.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, those are procedures that are, you know, invasive procedures that are going to have risks, you know, and I guess it's, you know, the question is the person willing to take the risk? Will they get the results that they want? I mean, to me, rather than sucking out fat in somewhat of a disorganized fashion, I think you're going to get a better result if you just shrink those fat cells, you know, mm-hmm. all together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, again, it does make a huge difference. Just looking at, you know, when you're doing the intermittent fasting, it's not uncommon for people to end up, you know, eating maybe two meals a day in that 8 hour window. If they push it to 16 hours in that 8 hour window, you know, they're going to see some big benefits there, just eating the two meals. And the other thing that I see oftentimes is that, you know, people are drinking a lot of sweet tea, for example, or, you know, sweetened drinks, whether
soft
it's a lemonade.
Drinks, right.
Right. Soft, you know, yeah, exactly. And what happens is, you know, that is loaded with corn syrup, basically. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. And high fructose corn syrup, our liver, your liver cannot metabolize it. It's sort of like alcohol. We all know if we drink too much alcohol, it's going to potentially lead to cirrhosis of the liver. So will high fructose corn syrup. And so here we are, you know, now, at least for me in my practice, I'll have people come in, you know, they are in their 50s and they've got cirrhosis of the liver. Maybe they're even in liver failure or requiring a liver transplant, and they've never been a drinker their entire lives. You know, it is all from the high fructose corn syrup because they were drinking soda that's loaded, you know, or they were going through the drive-through and getting the sweet tea, which is also sweetened with high fructose corn syrup. So that would be another huge change. And, you know, I really believe high fructose corn syrup also has an impact on hormones. You know, it's something that is going to, again, spike the glucose, spike the insulin, and you're going to end up packing fat around that liver and developing fatty liver from eating that as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier, and I wanted to bring it up again, you know, there are so many women that are afraid to eat protein and they don't want to overdo the protein. But I am always like, you need to eat more protein. How much protein should we have at this time of our lives?
For most people, if you divide your weight in half, okay, so you're not a bodybuilder, okay? Bodybuilders is different, all right? But if you divide your weight in half, you know, that's about the grams of protein that you should have in a day. And you're right, most women don't get enough protein in their diet.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they're not getting protein, then chances are they're probably eating a granola bar. That's grain. All right. So it's going to cause the weight gain. And even a lot of the things that you see that are gluten-free, you know, are still incredibly high in carbohydrate and sugar content. And so those are off the table. I mean, definitely not something that we should be eating.
Good. So I know from reading your book, I've been reading your book, and, you know, you talk about the fact that the foods now have a lot less nutritional value than they had, you know, decades past. So we have to kind of make that up, and it might be through supplements. What are the best supplements that we, or supplements that we need to be taking at this time in our life to kind of bridge that gap?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So I like to talk about foundational nutrients. Okay. So what's the foundational supplements that someone might need? And for me, in my practice, it's typically a multivitamin. I'll talk about brands in a minute, but a multivitamin, I usually recommend an omega-3 essential fatty acid supplement. Vitamin D, you may need to have your vitamin D level checked to see, you know, if you're in range or not, but those are kind of the basic things that are necessary. One of the things that we do in our practice is called micronutrient testing. And it's basically a blood work that is looking inside of a white blood cell to see, what am I deficient in? What are my cells missing? And it's testing, you know, calcium, it's testing vitamin D, it's checking all of your B vitamins, you know, it's looking at your omegas, it's looking at just a whole variety of things inside the cell, which helps us to customize, what does this person need? You know, what do they really need in terms of, you know, a vitamin supplement and so forth. So that's one approach. But typically, if we're doing just a multivitamin and omega-3 and a vitamin D, there are several functional medicine brands that I like. You know, we've got some of those on deannaholdren.com. And I like Orthomolecular brand. I like Metagenics brand. As well. I also like one called Pure Encapsulations. That's because those are all clean companies. You know, I can trust the ingredients.
Right.
I know how they're sourced. And I also know that they do not have any gluten in them as well. So that's important to so many people.
Yeah. Those are really good suggestions because, you know, most of us will just jump on Amazon and grab something and, you know, you never, I mean, I wouldn't be able to go on there and know what's clean and what's not. So a good recommendation is great. You know, we're talking about people go to the doctor and they're going to do these extreme measures. Would you suggest when somebody is trying to figure out how to eat a better diet and do things, should they see a nutritionist? I mean, is that a good thing to do? Is that a recommendation?
You know, it actually is. If it's something that their insurance will cover or they're able to do that, I do recommend a functional med nutritionist because I think that it's a little different. And I think that they're going to kind of customize based on what that person's needs are. You know, if you've got somebody who's having, you know, significant GI issues, then, you know, they may help them come up with a plan that's going to support, you know, the GI system. But there are a lot of great nutritionists out there that can really add a lot of value. But for a lot of people, if they just follow this simple advice, you know, they're going to see results. And if you're getting results and you're feeling better and, you know, you just continue doing that until you reach your goal.
Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like when I read these message boards and people are like, well, that's not working for me and it's not working. It's like, well, how long did you do it? Did you do it for a couple of days? Did you make changes for a couple of days? I mean, how long does it take to kind of really get into changing your lifestyle and seeing some results?
Another great question. So I think that you can see results immediately in week one. Okay. And that's kind of, for a lot of people, that's what's going to drive them is seeing that, okay, I'm losing inches. I can, you know, the scale's going down. Typically when people first do a plan, like what I've talked about, you know, where they are eating clean, okay. They're eating clean, healthy foods. They've gone grain-free and sugar-free and they're adding in, you know, the 12 to 14 hour intermittent fasting. It's not uncommon for them to lose as much as 5 pounds in that first week. And some of that's water weight, of course. And some of it's just fat that's shrinking. And then, you know, your body's getting rid of that. So, you know, you can see results right away. I think that the hard part for a lot of people is they're addicted to sugar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the sugar detox can be really difficult. I think the key is to know that just like any other, sugar is an addiction.
Right.
Okay. It absolutely is an addiction. We can look at the brain scans of people, you know, when they're eating sugar and it's this, it lights up the same as somebody using heroin. Okay.
Yeah.
So we know that there's an addiction component, just like when somebody is fighting an addiction of other sorts, you know, chances are they're going to relapse. Okay. They're going to fall off the wagon. Mm-hmm. It's normal.
Yeah.
But they're working toward this. Okay. They have a reason why. And I think that's important. Why am I doing this? Whether it's for my family, for my grandchildren, for, you know, whatever it might be. So that is important to you. You've got to decide that. And then working toward that. And if you fall off, so what? You get right back on very next meal. All right. Don't throw away the whole day. This is where we mess up. So many people are all or none. And they think, well, I just messed up. It's lunchtime. I was starving and I did something really bad, you know, and they ate whatever it was that came into the office. And now they think, well, I'm just going to throw away today. I'm going to eat whatever I want. And I'm going to start new tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is not going to work. It is not going to work. Yes, you messed up. Move on. But, right. But the best thing you can do is immediately get right back on board. Right. So if I were to have a big lunch for some reason, chances are I would not have a large meal for dinner. I probably would go for the, you know, the plant-based protein shake, for example, because it's lighter and I already had one large meal that day. So kind of, you know, dividing that up. I mean, there are times that I might, you know that some event is going on. Okay. Let's see. I'm saving my carbs. They're like money, you know,
right, and I'm
counting that carbohydrate. And so, no, I do not want to have any carbs at lunch today because I know what's coming later. So that, and I will kind of work meals around that as well.
It's okay. A lifestyle.
So in terms of results, I mean, results can be, you know, pretty fast. It's just sticking with it and, you know, just knowing, you've got to tackle that sugar addiction and it's going to be hard. Okay. It will be hard, but you can do it. Do it with a friend. Okay. And have a support group. Okay. So when you're doing it together, it always makes it easier, but you absolutely can do it.
Yeah. So what about someone who's a little bit older? They're a little past midlife and they have packed on some pounds and they're kind of like, well, it's too late for me. It's going to be too hard. And, you know, I am the way that I am. What do you say to them? Because I mean, this weight gain will affect their health and their longevity at this point, I would say.
Right. Absolutely. And it's never too late. Okay. It is never too late to get healthy. It is never too late to improve your health position. And I think that, you know, you are worth it. I think your family is worth it. And I think you kind of have to put it in that perspective. If something happens that you get sick, let's say you, you know, get COVID, you're going to do better if you are not, you know, massively overweight. Right. So there's a reason to get healthy. And I think a lot of people are looking at that right now. You know, your blood pressure will improve. Your type 2 diabetes will improve. You know, your heart disease will improve. So many things will improve just by making those lifestyle changes. So, you know, and for a lot of people, if they are having those illnesses, those diseases that I just named off, they are on so many medications. They might be on 10, 15 different medications. They feel horrible. They wonder why they are so tired all day long. It's not normal to be tired all day. You should have great energy all day long. All of us should. So when they feel, you know, horribly during the day, you know, what is that? A lot of times it's the medication. The medication is, you know, dropping their B vitamins, making them deficient in several of those. You know, it's dropping their zinc level. And so here they are. Now they've got lowered immune system. They've got fatigue, and they just generally do not feel well. And again, to be able to eliminate a medication is an amazing, amazing accomplishment.
Yes,
and it can be, it can be done, and it is being done. So I just think that it's, you know, you got to understand that you're worth it and your family is worth it as well.
Yeah. So tell us about your book. Like I said, I've been reading it. And so I have re-upped for my family on a whole foods diet. Just, you know, like I was telling you before we started recording, you know, I knew a lot of these things, but you'd have to be reminded sometimes. Tell us about your book.
Okay. So the book is basically a healing handbook. It's a guide to help you get back on track with your health. It was something that we put together basically to help my patients, you know, on their journey and to kind of guide them. It's just a lot of advice. That's what the podcast is as well, is basically just the book but in spoken form. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what it's designed to do. It's just, it's a roadmap. Okay. It's the how to, and the why behind it, because I think that's so important. You know, I know for me, I'm a why person. I need to understand how things work and why it is this way. Uh-huh. And so for me to really affect change, you know, I have to understand that root cause and go after it. And so we go through a lot in a lot more detail, you know, the glyphosate, autism. We talk a lot about just general health and really the changes that we've seen in the food supply that have had an impact. And I think that when you read it, you walk away going, you know, I do have a choice as far as what I eat and what my family eats, but I don't have a choice. I really need to make this change because it's the most beneficial thing and it's going to have incredible long-term effects and long-term benefits if we make these changes.
Right. And not only you on you, but on your family, on your children.
Correct.
And you know, you teach them how to eat that way, then they will teach their children. So it's generational.
Yes.
Where can people find your book?
You can get the book at deannaholdren.com. It's readily available there.
Okay.
And I believe it's on Amazon as well.
Okay. And I'll put all the information in the show notes. I'll find out everywhere you can get it. And I will put that in the show notes. And so you said your podcast is kind of like a reiteration of your book. Is it a little bit more in detail and you go into some examples and that sort of thing?
You know, it is. I do use some patient examples in that podcast. I tend to keep it at small 10 to 15 minute clips because sometimes I can get a little too sciencey. And so I try to keep it short and digestible and then also easily shareable as well. So, that's the gist of the podcast.
Great. So I have one final question for you. So what would be your biggest piece of advice that you can give to other women that are in this time of their life as they face things they may not have been prepared for with their health?
I think the biggest piece of advice I could give is to help them understand that you are worth it, and that you have tremendous value in your family, and that your care is so, so very important. Chances are you're running it all. You're running the whole show. And it is important for you to take care of yourself and to carve out time for to get those steps in, to, you know, do some meal prepping. You are worth it. And all of this is going to make such a difference for you, you know, across the board. The other thing is, no matter what it is that you're faced with, whatever health care crisis it might be, you know, cleaning up your diet is going to improve that. So I want you to know that you do have some control. I think a lot of times in medicine, people feel like, I have this disease and I have no control. You know, I've lost control. I just have to deal with this disease. And that's not the case. You know, you do have some control through diet. And so I would just encourage you to access that, take advantage of it.
I love that message. And with that, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and talking about the subject, because it is probably right up there with women that are in midlife and in their menopausal, perimenopausal years. I mean, weight gain is up there and a big topic that we want to know about. And like you said, it's great news to know that we can take control of it.
So yep, I think absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me on today. I appreciate it.
A great big thank you to Dr. Deanna for being on today to address what I think is probably the number one worry, or at least one of the top worries that women in midlife face, and that is the weight gain we all seem to be experiencing at this time of life. But again, I mean, how wonderful is it to find out that if we develop a why and stick to a good eating and nutritional and movement plan, that it is controllable by anyone and everyone, not just some women, but by all women. You have to remember that. So here are just a few takeaways from today to not forget. Number one, you need to understand what is going on in your body during menopausal weight gain. Your metabolism is changing. When that happens, we are becoming super sensitive to carbohydrates. Carbs spike your blood sugar, and your body produces insulin, more insulin. And while insulin drops the blood sugar, it sends signals and messages to pack it on as fat. We literally are grain-fed like cattle. Number two, activity becomes a non-negotiable after 50. You need to be getting 10,000 steps a day. Number three, add in some intermittent fasting. Start with a 12-hour fast at nighttime. No calories in that 12 hours. In that 12 hours, your body burns through glucose, and anything over the 12 hours begins to burn fat. If you push your fast to 14 hours, you get 2 hours of fat burn. Push it to 16 hours, you get 4 hours of fat burn. Number four, the best supplements to take in midlife are a typical multivitamin, omega-3, and vitamin D. And number five, you can see results in week one. Eat clean, eat grain-free, sugar-free, and use some intermittent fasting. The hard part is going to be breaking your addiction to sugar. The sugar detox can be difficult because sugar is addictive, but you can do it. I hope that you have heard something today that will fire you up to start taking care of your one and only body. And I hope that you share this episode with someone that you think needs to hear it as well. Now, make sure to pick up Dr. Deanna's book for some real explanation of what is happening in your body and what you can do to continue to take back some of the control that you need. Check out the show notes for all of the ways to find her, her book, and her podcast. And there you're also going to find a link to where you can pick up the You Deserve It notebook, goal tracker, planner, and journal, which is another good place to start taking control of your daily intentions with diet and exercise. When you're able to sit down every day and write out the plans in all of the areas, it will help you execute those plans. So I encourage you to invest in yourself with this very important tool. Thank you for listening today. The last chapter of 2022 has begun with the coming of fall. So I hope that you are all doing the most every day to prepare yourself for a new year that is literally right around the corner. So as I wrap up, just a reminder to show as much compassion to others as you yourself need today. Go out and make this world a better and healthier place. Till next week, everybody. See ya. Bye.